Well, good morning, everyone. And I'm doing this a little bit differently. This is the third substitute program for the program that I gave on the fourth. Yes, I believe it was the 4th of September, but it didn't quite work out because of some computer difficulties. So I'm trying to do it this way at this time. And I'm also, you know, decked out my best 13th century look. I'm trying this without the headphone just to see how it might work. So we have reached the point, as I say, this is substitute program number 3, and then followed by the questions and answers from 4, from the 4th of September last time. And I'm going to, do my best to get this under control. 1, 2, all right. So we're in the, you know, quite a bit of work in footnotes here. The definition of Akasha from the Secret Doctrine. It is the synthesis of ether. And by ether, perhaps we mean, should we mean aether? Aether? Because I think so. Below, we find Brahma, aether, Atma, the Atmic plane. We have the lower five planes, of which Akasha is the synthesis. How do they do it? Soniferous ether, or the sounding ether. It's very sensitive to sound and to light. And again, let me look here and see if I can. There. Okay, so what I'll do here. Here it is, and it's called here the ether, okay? And the five planes below, I think, begin with the aether, A-E-T-H-E-R. And so we have a synthesis of these five found on the second sub-plane, which is the monadic plane. And then above that, the sea of fire that we have been commenting on. So this is an important map, and it's one that, I don't think I can move it. It's one that we will be referring to frequently. Page 35 of Esoteric Astrology, and also found within A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So here we have, it is the synthesis of ether. It looks like these terms, ether and aether, are kind of mixed. It is the essence of ether. And I think, again, aether is the better term. It is primordial ether, or, it's not the sea of fire, but it is derived from the sea of fire. So these three statements suggest that the meaning of ether here given is not the usual. For instance, the first cosmic etheric level is the sea of fire, which is occurring on the first or logoic plane, should be the synthesis of all the four ethers. should be the synthesis of the four cosmic ethers. Now, I know that, you know, we have here some foundational technicalities which may be a little bit boring, but at least they give us a solid orientation. So if Akasha is all these things, then what is HPB's definition of context, of ether in this context? I think of it as the Tibetan thinks of it as the four higher subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. Those are the four cosmic ethers. So perhaps the term Akasha here is being given a broader and higher meaning than the substance energy of the second or monadic subplane. Remember, when we're dealing with that which substands, it is an energy. So at this point, could she be, that is HPB, could she be equating the term ether with aether, which begins on the third subplane of the cosmic physical plane? Generally, aether is found there. Let's see if we can. Okay, it doesn't really show it here, but in some other charts, and I would have to find out which ones, the atmic plane is called the aether. And it is the third cosmic ether. Now, we still have a lot to sort out as to what kind of atoms are found there. Perhaps the term Akasha is being given a higher meaning. Since Akasha is higher than the aether of the atmic plane, it could be called, in relation to atmic aether, the synthesis, the essence, the primordial and primordial, in relation to the aether. Otherwise, to call Akasha these things and confine its meaning to the substance energy of the second cosmic subplane does not make sense. But usually, Akasha is associated precisely with the second subplane, second cosmic etheric subplane. Okay, what else is said here? It is the third logos in manifestation. Now, this is, what is the it? Lest we forget, it is the Akasha. So, manifestation, the third logos really, is Brahma. And from another perspective, the five planes of Brahma are the second logos, Vishnu, in manifestation. So, you know, the second subplane, the plane of the Akasha, is called Vishnu Surya. At least those are the Rajadeva lords which are in charge. So, you know, we have some terminological issues going on here. We must ponder, in what way is Akasha the third logos in manifestation? Only a very broad definition of Akasha would make this possible. If the third logos had differentiated primordial matter into the matter of the 49 subplanes of the systemic plains. Then that matter would be generically called Akasha. Akasha is the third logos in manifestation. So there are some different perspectives here. And, you know, I don't think we can hope for an exact congruence between the terms HPV uses and those which are used by the Tibetan. In any case, the usual terminology for the second subplane, cosmic etheric subplane is ether, or rather Akasha. And for the third subplane down, it is aether, or the head, the top of Brahma, the creator, because at the atmic plane is both a plane of power, it's the sort of will aspect of Brahma, but it's also a plane of intelligence if we begin with Sea of Fire, Akasha, and then Aether. It's a realm of intelligent will. Okay, so I want to put that down. The third cosmic subplane is the realm of intelligent will. It is the will aspect of Brahma, and as Brahma is considered on the cosmic physical plane. Now, there's a greater Brahma that we can say is identified, a greater Brahma is identified with Agni, and the lower 18 cosmic subplanes. Okay, what about aether? Now that's again the third subplane and the fifth subplane, depending on which way we count. Aether can be symbolized as a pyramid inscribed in a sphere. Think about that. The pyramid has five points, and the top of the pyramid is the will aspect of Brahma. And the sphere is Akasha. I think that makes sense. I guess I'm trying to be, you know, meticulously entiretous here, just a little bit too much. Pyramid. Okay. Well, I believe that's pyramid. I believe that's the way to spell it. So ether, as given in the three statements immediately above, may be aether plus the lower four subplanes, the four elements. Okay, in other words, this as ether plus the lower four. That may be one way of considering it, if we look at it from the point of view of cosmic subplanes. Okay. Remember that the four highest planes are called etheric planes, but they are cosmic etheric planes. Remember that. Buddhic, atmic, monadic, logoic. 4321. There are also super cosmic etheric planes, cosmic buddhic, cosmic atmic, cosmic monadic, and cosmic logoic. And I think I'll show those now this way. So this is super cosmic buddhic, super cosmic atmic, super cosmic monadic, super cosmic logoic. Okay. And these are simply cosmic subplanes, cosmic etheric, cosmic buddhic, cosmic monadic, cosmic logoic. All right. It takes a little patience from me too, you know, from all of us. Okay. Footnote, a group of factors to be related are Vulcan, atomic matter, higher vibration, and the fourth initiation. Yes, indeed, Vulcan is involved. When you are between a rock and a hard place in the fourth initiation, and it shows you that Vulcan has the fourth ray associated with it. Okay, Vulcan, if I could just spell it, has the fourth ray associated with it monadically, and is active at the fourth initiation when the fourth ray is active. The highest of the cosmic subplanes is the home of the least differentiated matter of the solar system, if we consider the solar system existing only on the cosmic physical plane. And Vulcan is relating to the Sea of Fire. Even down on our own levels of the Agni Chaitans, we find Vulcan very much involved with this fiery element. Okay, well, that should get us started. You know, these are fundamentals, and maybe they are fundamentals that some of us would rather forget. But anyway, they are foundational fundamentals. Now we have here footnote 10. And the Akasha is defined in the following terms. Akasha, the astral light, can be defined in a few words, but basically we may be talking about a higher form of astral light, not just the astral light of the astral plane, the sixth down or the first up, or second up, really. It may be a higher kind of astral light. Okay, this is Akasha again. So, it is the universal soul, the matrix of the universe, related to the mother aspect. And we have birth through sound. The matrix of the universe. Now, what universe? The universe, even our solar system, is sometimes called a universe. So it's hard to tell when he's talking about the grand entirety, the entire universe, or whether he's talking about simply our solar system. The mysterium magicum, the magical mystery from which all that exists is born by separation or differentiation. Now, this usually, when speaking of differentiation, we are usually Speaking of vortices or whirlwinds. Because when things turn, well, turn on themselves, or let's call it rotate, they differentiate specific areas within the Mula Prakriti, and those areas are at first separated and not really related. Later they become related, especially under the second ray. In the various occult books, it is called by different terms, and it would be of value perhaps if we enumerate some of them here. There is one universal element with its differentiations. So this is the element, the universal element is the analogy to Mula Prakriti. It may not be absolutely homogeneous, Mula Prakriti, but on any level of seven, it is the least differentiated. In other words, we don't imagine that pure Mula Prakriti, as it is found on the, you know, top of the universe, is the constituent of the sea of fire. There is much differentiation already in the Sea of Fire, because the Sea of Fire is the highest part of Shambhala, and we've already read about how streams of force and centers of force and all that are found in Shambhala. And it is the council chamber that is found on that logoic plane and in the Sea of Fire. So the Mula Prakriti, relative to the solar system, is already differentiated, but it is the least differentiated cosmic subplane to be found in the seven cosmic subplanes. From there on, greater and greater differentiation occurs, and all kinds of more complex unions occur. So that, let's just say, the etheric permanent atom on the first level of the systemic etheric plane is far more complex than any kind of atom you're going to find on the monadic plane or the logoic plane, though all of those atoms are produced by the bubbles in the koilon. Okay. So there's one universal element, let's call it the Sea of Fire, at least as related to our solar system. Let us call that universal element the Sea of Fire. And the universal element is the analogy to Mula Prakriti. But far, far more differentiated than primal universal root matter. Let's get that universal correct and get rid of our underlining, as we don't need that. Okay. So what I've said here, in this case, Akasha does seem to be related to the Sea of Fire. The Sea of Fire is maximally undifferentiated substance possible. The maximally undifferentiated substance possible in our solar system, but let us remember, not pure primordial matter or pure pre-genetic matter. You know, I'm filling in a bit. As found on the very highest level of the entire universe. So what's the thing to grab out of this? That the Sea of Fire is like Mula Prakriti as far as the solar system is concerned. But it is much more differentiated than pure Mula Prakriti on the very highest level of the entire universe, which I say is a self-reflection of the undifferentiated universal logos. So in this case, the list tabulated below, and I think we got that far last time, but I was not happy with it because of the disturbance we experienced. And I hope to avoid such disturbances here in the future. The list tabulated below includes as categories the Sea of Fire and not only Akasha. It will be clear that much that is listed below is about first subplane substance energy, the Sea of Fire, as well as primordial substance. As well, primordial substance finds its way into the tabulation. So I said here, aether is to be taken as a higher form of ether, as it's usually sort of like the fifth category from below. It's atmic. And there is a potential confusion in the mixture of terms below, so we have to proceed carefully. Now we did try to get through this. And we have two columns. One is homogeneous or consisting of units that are entirely the same, or on a very high level, consisting of completely undifferentiated pre-genetic universal matter. Completely undifferentiated pre-genetic universal matter. So, completely undifferentiated pre-genetic universal matter. So the two columns are the more homogeneous column and then the more differentiated. So undifferentiated cosmic substance, considering it in terms of the solar system, that's what we call it. Let's just say the substance, okay. The substance of the Sea of Fire and the astral light. So astral means starry. That's the differentiated part. And in this meaning, it's certainly not confined to the astral plane, but relates to the substance energy of all planes below the logoic. So in this case, I think he said that the plane of Akasha is also called the astral light. It's kind of interesting because the usual astral light is found two planes from below. This higher form of astral light is beginning two planes from above. And maybe the monad has somehow its entire history wrapped up in it. Now you have to think that the monad has had a huge descent before it has found its way into the Earth scheme and is undertaking a more individualized type of evolution through the monadic pilgrimage. Through the lower five subplanes and in different ways. Really, in a way, the monad extends no lower than the higher systemic subplanes on the higher mental plane. But it has other kinds of ramifications. The monad is involved somehow in the first outpouring, which differentiates matter, and that's the Fohatic outpouring, and the second outpouring, which starts to build form out of that matter. And the third outpouring is the re-energizing of all the forms of matter by the spirit aspect. So now, in terms of homogeneous, we have primordial ether. In this case, it cannot be found on the second cosmic subplane, and it's in the sea of fire. Now, you know, primordial ether, the way we usually consider it, it's the topmost cosmic ether. And it's also called the Sea of Fire, and it refers to the first subplane. And this has streams of force and centers of force in our definition of Shambhala. Let's see if I can find that just to, if I can find that, I'll kind of move this down here, AAB extracts, and we'll say streams, and maybe I think a better way to do that is Shambhala. I'm going to refer to that. So now I will find it. Described as a world of beauty. Okay. We're going to take a look at that and recognize that this is another way of describing the Sea of Fire. So here it is. It is a world of pure energy, of light, and of directed force. It can be seen as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty, all potently invocative of the world of the soul and of the world of phenomena. You know, the triad is the world of the soul in a way, and so is the causal body on the higher mental plane. The world of phenomena, especially the lower 18 subplanes, where our planetary logos is concerned. It therefore constitutes in a very real sense, the world of causes and of initiation. So this is very important. All forming, it can be seen as streams and centers of force patterned. You see, they are patterned. And that's why we have to realize it's just not pure Mula Prakriti. It's a kind of Mula Prakriti, but not pure. So anyway, primordial ether, because the four higher ethers are cosmic ethers, the primordial ether is also equivalent to the sea of fire. And the ones on the left are terms which suggest more homogeneity, and on the right, more differentiation. It's called here the, well, let's see here. This is the Akasha, and the astral life can be, light can be defined in a few words. Let's see if we can find footnote number 10 in Cosmic Fire. And here's the Cosmic Fire. And we'll go to page 43 and we'll see. Here it is, footnote number 10, and here it is. It's called by different names, and perhaps we should enumerate some of them, and this is the map that we are looking at right now. There is one universal element with its differentiations. Now, there's no way that we're going to get a complete congruency here. It's just not going to happen in the terminology. And we find that certain terms seem to suggest sea of fire and others Akasha, but then maybe Akasha in this sense means something higher than the usual second subplane. If there's one universal element, it is on the plane of the sea of fire. It is the sea of fire itself. And we're sticking to our solar system as we do this. Now, probably, let's just make sure that you see this. Here it is. These are the terms that we are trying to amplify just a little bit. No, I can't underline there. Okay. Now let's go back to where I've made a copy of these. So one universal element, I think that's really important, what we're talking about, that we are elaborating on the one universal element at the top of our solar system. Remember, not the top of the universe. Maybe there are analogies, but we're just talking about how the solar system is composed. What are its constituents? So pretty well what's in the left-hand column is the one universal element, even though it has associations with other levels. This term Akasha, we normally consider it connected with the second subplane, but in this case, the one universal element seems to be taking on the name Akasha, and Prakriti is matter. So the, let's just say the most refined matter is found in the Akasha, considered when the Akasha is considered the sea of fire. Interesting. Okay, we're dealing with the one universal element. We have to remember that, even though the terms in the left-hand column vary. Now, maybe the best way is to think that atoms become simpler and simpler the closer we are to the top of the solar system. You know, you have to, using words like bottom and top, you get the kind of pancake analogy. Really, these are all rotating spheres, these planes, and they have their own rate of rotation, which is probably one of the secrets of initiation, I'm sure, and great designs are created by that rotation. This great serpent with the diamonds on its back, gosh, we even have a diamondback rattler, don't we? I mean, you know, some of the very high forms transpose themselves into very concrete forms. And everything, of course, has its purpose and its use. So we can call this the primordial ether and the sea of fire. And then in the undifferentiated state, we call it the primordial electric entity. And I'll just ask a question. Is this pure electric fire? And then differentiated into the different modes, the different, okay, into the different modes of electricity. We don't know so much about electricity, especially the higher types. And he tells electricity, he tells us we know practically nothing about the neutral type of electricity, which I suppose can be connected with solar fire. Now, this is Akasha, considered as root matter. And you see, this term is flexible. In one respect, quite specifically, it's connected with the second subplane. Second subplane of the, or the second cosmic ether. But in another respect, he associates it with the sea of fire. And then the differentiated part of Akasha is called Prakriti. The most refined matter is found in the Akasha. When the Akasha is considered the sea of fire, and it is not always considered as the sea of fire. It's considered the super astral light. Now, if normal Akasha of the second cosmic ether is the higher astral light. So super astral light, good Lord, what a lot of terms. And we can be forgiven if we get a little confused about them. I think I got a little rattled in the last presentation because of the runaway computer. And I don't think I approached this in the simplicity that it really exists. Atomic matter is just another way of describing it, and often we do. So this is a useful chart to a useful kind of tabulation. If we want to see the various ways of describing this height, this energetic height of our solar system. Remember that the cosmic astral body and the cosmic mental body are not ordinarily considered aspects of our solar system. They are considered vehicles of our solar logos, but in the same way that our astral body and our mental body are not considered dense etheric or etheric dense, you know, our physical nature. So it is the solar system has to do with the physical nature or physical etheric nature of the solar logos, and the cosmic astral and the cosmic mental are not really part of that etheric physical aspect of the solar logos, which we call Agni in one way, the lower 18 subplanes. The fiery serpent, how interesting. And why the serpent of evil? I would think this would depend on the use of the energy. So this is a little enigmatic to me. That highest aspect of matter energy, matter substance energy, is called also Mula Prakriti, but I've already explained about that. Matter substance energy in their highest solar systemic mode. Differentiated, it's called ether with its four divisions: air, fire, water, earth, but also aether and akasha. In other words, the Mula Prakriti, such as it is, of the first subplane of the cosmic physical plane, contains all the lower six divisions. In the same way, I've often said, you know, take seven pennies, put one down, and six will surround it. So the central penny is the analogy to the Sea of Fire, Atomic Matter, Mula Prakriti, you know, all these different names. Maybe you have to just find the name that suits you best, the name that is most meaningful to you. Pre-genetic matter. Now, the ultimate universal pre-genetic matter is absolutely homogeneous Mula Prakriti. It doesn't have differentiation in it. So let's just say, but this is about the solar system, and it's way, way down on the emanative stream. So the matter most undifferentiated, from which the solar system is comprised through ongoing emanation. I think it's difficult to know where this emanative pattern ends. Certainly we can look to the top of the universe and say, well, everything in the universe is a reduced self-perception or an emanation. And it goes down and down and down, meaning deeper and deeper in limitation, and deeper and deeper in what we might call prakritic immersion in matter. Well, anyway, what we have seen here now let's see if we can look at this here without too much problem. Not going to be easy here. One, two, three. So we have seen many terms for the substance, energy of the logoic plane. And terms for more differentiated states. Now, you know, if we were to sit back and say, well, can we imagine any of that? We haven't really investigated or taken apart the structure of the planes and subplanes and sub-subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, which is the normal area in which we pursue our normal evolution. And, you know, this is the one I'm talking about. It's pretty big because it's important. Every one of these other cosmic or supercosmic subplanes is what they are, really. They are cosmic planes or supercosmic subplanes. Every one of them would be also as big as the lower one, but then, of course, you couldn't follow what's going on there, and DK would not articulate them for us anyway, because, you know, it's just beyond. It's enough to know that certain of the ways of higher evolution lead to destinations on these cosmic planes or super cosmic subplanes, and that one fine day, maybe after we have been retained as initiates of the sixth degree on our planet to help Sanat Kumara, if he's passing through a period when the assistance of sixth degree initiates is needed, well, one fine day we will make a decision. And really only one is correct. That's the scary thing there. You know, you can make a mistake, but generally by that time we know more. And mistakes are less likely. We'll make a decision that will take us on one of those paths and to one of those destinations on the cosmic planes. I sometimes wonder that even though we're told that the path of absolute sonship leads to the cosmic mental plane, I've wondered whether it doesn't lead ultimately to the cosmic ethnic plane. This super cosmic ethnic subplane. Now, of course, you know, it's when we can barely control our emotions and when our minds are still relatively unclear, it's hard to speak of these exalted matters with seriousness. But we will find out in the millennia ahead what kind of destiny awaits us. It will usually be the destiny of dissent. And I'm going to kind of put that down. I hope that was okay. The destiny, of ascent, emanative ascent, or retractive ascent, is the path along which we emanatively descended. Will we remember? Will we know? Will we temporarily choose something else which may not be entirely correct, the way the Buddha did choose the path of earth service, when, as DK said, that was not at all his path, really. But such was the attractive magnetism of compassion that he decided to stay, which is a different type of staying than Sanat Kumara's request to the sixth degree initiates at this time to remain with him to help in this planetary crisis. So here's some other thoughts that Akasha can mean: matter of all kinds on the cosmic physical plane. So maybe Akasha is a general term and not confined to the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, though it may mean that the second subplane substance energy is the area to which Akasha most often refers. In the tabulation above, we pretty well looked at everything in the left-hand column, including the term Akasha and what was it, super something? Super astral light, well, all those in terms of pre-genetic matter, most refined and least differentiated matter of the entire solar system, our solar system. The reader must beware of these confusing changes in terminology. Setting upon a set of definitions, which is valid most of the time, and achieve mental stability. So I would say the word should be S-E-T-T, settle. It's like a piece of advice. Then be alert to alternations of terminology in varying contexts. So it can drive you a bit crazy, and you say, why must we be involved with all these changes of terminology? And Master Moria himself decries the many, many terms that are used for the same thing. I think he finds it just confusing. And he's kind of recommending against it. Okay, and then sound is the property of Akasha. It is the sonoriferous ether. The second ether is sonoriferous ether. So some points emerged in the group discussion. Akasha is the ocean of sound. And so we might say, you know, the origin on the cosmic physical plane of music. I would just want to say that the second ray as much to do with music as does the fourth ray. So I like that term very much, the sonoriferous ether. There are four cosmic ethers there. The second one is sonoriferous. It's from one of the Upanishads. Okay. I guess one could make a whole study of a life study of the Upanishads. Akasha is the medium where all the vibrations we have created are stored. Everything the monad, try to keep that, has ever done is stored in the higher Akasha, which, you know, just like the astral light, and temporarily in the lower vibratory strata. Astral light is, I'll capitalize it. The lower astral light is considered a recorder of planetary history. The higher astral light is the Akasha, when Akasha means the substance energy of the second subplane, second cosmic subplane of the four cosmic ethers. Let's get that straight. Okay. Akasha. Not Askasha, but Akasha. Okay. So, there is storage. And that leads you to the question, what is the history of the monad? And at some point, DK says it's really a lengthy history, even in this solar system. Finally, there's only one monad. That one monad is the one super universal deity. But there are differentiations of that, and one of the differentiations is the universal deity, universal logos, and then emanatively all the other monads that comes from it, which really all those other monads are it, but under the spell of the limitations of illusion, they don't realize that at first. So what is the history of the monad? A very complex matter of long duration. As we tend to focus on what we're doing right here in this solar system or on this planet, But ever since, the universe appeared as an emanation of the universal logos. Our own monadic potential was there, even though our true identity is the universal logos itself. The right use of the sacred word will re through that we will be restored to the Akasha, and the right use will bring us home. Home is the logoic plane as far as home in the solar system is concerned. Want to go home, you know, E.T., go home. Show me the way to go home. It will take us to where the Christ is now on the highest level of the cosmic physical plane. Now, there are other and higher homes, and on the way of higher evolution, we will be entering the astral body and the mental body, lower mental body especially, of the solar logos. Again, you know, the map, where is home? Temporarily with the Christ and the Buddha, home is up here. But home is really finally a return to identification as the great universal logos, the great universal God. That is home. And does it stop there? No, it doesn't, because there's a further home, if I can use limiting words, on the other side of universal manifestation. So there's another home to be found in absolute infinitude, and the final home in absoluteness itself. And that's what we have mysteriously derived from in our present form. So in it is the sum total of that which is active, animated, or vitalized, and of all that concerns itself in the adaptation of form to the needs of the inner flame of life. Now here it seems that the more conventional definition of Akasha is being used, and the inner flame of life seems to be a term connected to the sea of fire. Well, there are seven great circles, we're told, on our normal monadic plane, and each one of us as a monad finds his or her, I guess, you know, no division of the sexes at that point, but finds, we have to express it that way, his or her focus in one of these seven. It says even here, the human monad. It gives a little arrow here. I wonder, No, it's going to be down here. Here it is, right there. A human monad. That has made its way to the monadic plane, but which looks forward to liberation into one of these three. And of course, the Christ has been liberated into one of those three, and almost certainly it is the indigo triangle or circle. Should we call it a triangle? Should we call it a circle? The sun, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Shiva, Vishnu, Brahma, or Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Mother, together, if three divisions are being used instead of four. All right. Maybe there's a little more to do. I did want to finish these replacement talks. So we're still dealing with, you know, what is Akasha? And in the tabulation, it's a sort of an undifferentiated term. I mean, at least it's not so specific as to say it's right there on the second subplane. A much broader kind of definition is being used, and it just seems to cover all types of matter on the cosmic physical plane, but even identified with the matter of the logoic plane. Now, we could ask about this inner fire that DK talks about. Inner flame of life, is that? Okay. Is this inner flame of life or is this inner flame of life not the matter of the sea of fire, but something still more essential? See, in a way, no matter what the material may be, pure being is other than any material. Pure being is more than any material. It is ultimate substance. So maybe it is also more than any matter found on the logoic plane. And from this angle, Akasha then would be everything except the essence of life. Pure being. Pure being is always substantial and non-material. Okay? Pure being, which is really pure being, is always substantial and non-material. Thus, in a way, Akasha is everything that is associated with the Devic kingdom. And then I'm kind of making a statement here, you know, we can think about the degree to which it is true. Akasha, thus, from this widened definition, is pattern in motion. Pattern in motion. So, a fluid term, which can represent specifically the soniferous ether of the Upanishads, or it can be the matter of the sea of fire. And we can probably extend the term into different types of akasha, which relate to cosmic beings and super cosmic beings and cosmic planes and super cosmic planes. You know, where do we stop? I mean, we cannot keep going. We just don't know enough. But all of these terms will have application to higher entities and to their expression on various cosmic and supercosmic planes. I think, you know, when we get to, see if I can find it, it's page 293 of Cosmic Fire. And 293. Okay, that's the problem. There we go. And take a look about the scope of expression. A solar logos lasts, well, it is expressing on three cosmic planes, the space of expression. But the analogy to the superhuman worlds, the cosmic logos, whose chakras are solar logoi, is expressing on four cosmic planes, which means the Buddhic plane too. And the unknown being, this one about whom naught may be said, has for the space of its expression the higher analogy to the superhuman worlds, and is expressing on the cosmic astral plane. And then we could go on naturally. So just to look at the space of expression, a solar logos expresses itself on three cosmic planes as a soul, as a cosmic soul. A cosmic logos expresses itself on four cosmic planes, and a super cosmic logos, or an one about whom naught may be said, expresses itself on five cosmic planes. And, you know, I have a feeling that in a way, these seven who are the rishis of the Great Bear, I feel they also belong on the green cosmic plane here, the cosmic epic. Now, you know, this is for us purely intellectual exercise, trying to understand structure of the great beings. Then this type of being, the seven sub-parabrahmic circles, would express on six cosmic planes, and a cosmic parabrahm, great triangle on top here, would express on seven cosmic planes. And that's certainly not the end of the story. So again, a vast universe or a vast system and cosmic system and super system and so forth, even in our local area. All this going on within our galaxy, and the masters know something about the nature of our galaxy and the Andromeda galaxy, and that's just the beginning of the galactic science of relations. Now, we may make the mistake of talking about the galaxy and in all kinds of fanciful terms, as if we could know anything about what are these lives, which I don't think we can whatsoever. But some people inflate or anthropomorphize supposed knowledge regarding our galaxy, as if, you know, to place man-like creatures on the higher realms of the super, you know, how many supers you want, by the time we reach the being who is the logos of a galaxy. I think what DK said is that the masters have a kind of a symbol, various symbols really, for different island universes, and they know maybe just a little about that. But that, of course, that is way, way beyond their scope, because they are trying to reach the logoic subplane. Cosmic logoic subplane, our very highest cosmic ether, and then to make the transition onto the cosmic astral and so forth. That's a long way below anything that could be said about galaxy and the galactic councils and all of this rather preposterous anthropomorphized fiction, which is just the extension of the human drama into reaches of vibration that we cannot possibly understand. So it's a great mistake, as far as I'm concerned, to try to get into specifics about that when we can't even get into specifics about the second and third systemic subplanes of the Buddhic plane or the Atmic plane. Forget about our monadic plane and what kind of powers are found there. There certainly will be powers. Or on the logoic plane of the council of Sanat Kumara, there certainly will be powers and cities there. But no, we can't do that, really. So, you know, Akasha, if we mean that it is also equivalent to what's going on in the Sea of Fire, is pattern in motion, another way of looking at it. Now, the final footnote here. Concerns Fohat. And I don't want to go too far because that would go into our next program. But a little something perhaps, or maybe actually Fohat is the place where we stopped with Parashakti, Kriya Shakti, you know, Janana Shakti, Mantrika Shakti, Icha Shakti, or is it pronounced like German? Icha Shakti, Kundalini Shakti, and maybe no shaktis at all for the seventh level. But I think that that is actually where we need to stop this program, because we did not really do footnote number 11. I won't blame you for wearying of these footnotes, but at least since Cosmic Fire, Treatise on Cosmic Fire, is the psychological interpretation of the secret doctrine, we do have to do our best to reconcile the secret doctrine, its narrative, its terminology, with the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, its narrative, its terminology. And that's what we're trying to do right now. It may all seem a bit over-specific, but then once you've begun to study it, it's going to fall more and more into place. And then we will not, so it's up to page 146. Then we will not, page 44. Okay, and let's look for our footnotes. Let's see if we can find them. Yeah, it's going to be on page 4344. That's as far as we would have gotten. This is the third and last replacement video for the first part of the program on page, or on the 4th of September. So I'm going to go back here and just try to round this up. Yeah. And I'll bring this down. We're going to get into footnote number 11. And I know this is where it will be. And this is program, I suppose, 32, and I think 8 solo, 8 of which are solo. And here we continued on page 43, and we got as far as page 44. And the day on which we did this was the 8th of September. And I'm saying, and I stand to be corrected, I've now done 8 solo programs, part 1 so far, of program 32, thus part 2 of the program. I'm not sure that this is, I think it might be program 30. Thus part 2 of program, of the program presented on 4th. And so we'll be starting with footnote 11. Continuing on the, what day, what fine day here? 2nd. Let's see here. Yeah. Here we go. I think this is the 8th. 8th, well, that doesn't make any difference. Continuing on the 11th of September, on the cusp of 43, 44, and then maybe perhaps this will be the 33rd program, relying on the communications group to straighten me out. Sorry about that. S-C-R-A-I-G-H-T-E-N. Straighten me out. Okay. So I'll wait now. This is the next presentation. And we'll... That'll be. And we'll talk about Parashakti, Kriyashakti, and so forth. And where we'll find that is here. And here are all the Shaktis. And I'll try to make that a little bigger so we can see it right now. Parashakti, Kriyashakti, Janana Shakti, Mantrika Shakti, Icha Shakti, and Kundalini Shakti, and no particular Shakti for the elemental lives. Okay, now I feel maybe a little more satisfied about covering this foundational material. Maybe you feel a little more frustrated and overwhelmed, but there's no way to clear up the problem that in theosophy, difficult terms are used and they are not necessarily congruent with each other. So the same term can be used for some different things and different terms for the same thing, as we have seen. But just to be aware of that is something. And then this will be sent to you, I hope, and before we get together again, you should be able to review it if you would like to. It's a more, somehow a simpler or at least clearer present, a more complete, certainly, presentation of the subject. And Fohat is going to be our subject next time, and that will take us all the way to the fires of the mental plane. And we'll see to what extent we go beyond that. We're reaching the end of this particular document, which is section 2 of the first series. And yes, I think we're getting quite close now. Okay, friends, lots of love, many blessings from all of us on the communications team. And we will get back with you as soon as we can. This coming Friday, we will enter into the question of Fohat. Not that we know a whole lot about Fohat, but okay. The different powers, the different consorts, for these powers, usually the powers are considered feminine, and there's a male consort, or, you know, always a pair that's connected with them. So we'll see you soon, and many blessings. Bye-bye.